So, ladies and gentlemen, friends, and fellow workers in the field of blindness studies, we will begin now. I will confirm that we have our interpreters with us. Marion, can you show me if we are getting French interpretation? Yes, we are, and they are here. Thank you very much. I will begin then. This is Vanessa Warren speaking, and if we have not had the chance to meet in this forum yet, I am a white, non-blind Canadian woman. I live on the Treaty of the Anishinaabe, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene peoples, homeland of the Métis Nation, Treaty 1 Territory, Winnipeg, Canada. And we welcome you back to our changed format. We will spend some time together now speaking to both the content of day four, this our final day of the conference, and then sharing also in conversation with you, we hope, some insights regarding the larger conference. But before we get into any details, I will invite my co-organizers, Hannah Thompson and Marion Chautin, to share a message from Zina Vegand, who had technical difficulties earlier today and whose microphone was not working. So may I pass you to you now, Marion, for that message.
Merci, Vanessa.
Thank you, Vanessa. So I'm Marion Chautin. I'm speaking to you from Paris. I'm a white sighted woman with brown hair. I'm wearing a navy blue dress today, and I'm going to pass on the message which Zina could not pass on due to microphone issues at the first panel debate today. So I'm now reading what she has to say. I wanted to thank Celine and Marion, so that's Marion Inc. I found their talks remarkable, and I wanted to highlight some points that I noted during their talks. There's the sense of slow science, which we should also apply to our social life. We're obsessed with speed, yield, and performance. Secondly, the notion of perception otherness, where there are devalued perceptions, for example, those of blind people. When we talk about partially sighted or non-sighted, there's immediately a value judgment there. She also noted the concept of interculturality to get out of oculocentrism. She also highlights the need to move outwards to have other results. There is medical power, which is available since statutory help has been available, having a place in Canevin Hospital, for example, where total blindness was required in order to obtain a place in this hospice in the 1820s. So Zina highlights the effects of this type of definition on the definition of blindness with this watershed moment where this particular type of medical power is not new. If you could please make sure that you speak into your microphone because we had some difficulty hearing what you had to say. Thank you, Celine, for that. Should I perhaps repeat what Dina said? I think it's okay.
Marion, it is Vanessa here. Could I ask you to put your microphone down? I think perhaps the microphone on your headset is still lifted up. Are you using a microphone?
Oui, c'est qu'en fait, j'en utilise.
Yeah, it is, but I'm actually using another one.
Pas de problem. Thank you. Okay. We will all speak as loudly and as slowly as we can for clarity. So thank you very much, Marion, and thank you to Zina for sharing those thoughts with us. A little brief introduction for those who are joining us now about our change of format. I will remind everyone that we will meet in just under 2 hours for David Johnson's closing workshop, which promises to be a very memorable and engaging experience. But for now, I will be calling on my co-organizers, Marion and Hannah, to share some thoughts on day four. And I would like, if we could, to begin with Hannah and ask her to introduce herself and then share some things that come to mind. I anticipate we will do a couple of circles to cover some of the content from today. And then we will shift to a broader conversation in which we hope to engage many of you, in which we will explore some of the things in English we would say your takeaways, what you will be leaving the conference with. And this may be a very large concept, a vein that runs through the rock of the conference, or it may be a very small and precious pebble that you have picked up and put in your cognitive pocket during this time together. But we will do that after we have a engagement now, beginning with Hannah, with our fourth day of content. Hannah, to you.
Thank you, Vanessa. I'm Hannah Thompson. I'm partially blind, woman in my late 40s. I'm white. I have my camera on at the moment, which means that you can probably just see my face. I sit very close to my screen. I'm wearing large purple glasses, and the screen tends to reflect off my glasses. It's also very sunny here, so I have the sun on my face. From today, I was struck by something which also came up yesterday, which was the idea of rethinking the definitions of previously negative concepts such as fragility and dependence. I really liked the way that Anaïs reclaims vulnerability and a kind of feminine touch, and showed how it's showed its potential as a research subject. And I think this goes further than just that particular area of focus. I think it reminds us that we are continually redefining our terms of reference, and that we need to keep on doing that critically, and be always questioning and never accepting the way we use language. And I thought Anaïs's definition of vulnerability was a good example of that.
Thank you, Hannah. Marion, can we turn to you now for an idea from today?
Eh bien, je peux commencer par
firstly, there was the deaf-blind roundtable and the joint research covering deafness and blindness through Marion Inc's research, and the approach suggested by Marion with regard to perception, which she calls a practical sensory approach. And indeed, I would like to ask her sometime whether she developed this concept herself, or whether she has borrowed it from somewhere else. But in any case, this concept of perception that is not focused on biological perception, but on sensory-centered perception, and move away from that to think of perception as a process, a collective, affective, emotional, social process. And I found that resonated with other times during the day and previous days during the symposium, and I think it's worth highlighting the idea that perception can be studied from a social science perspective, and I think that her work on deaf blindness is an example of blindness gain and deaf gain. If I could also perhaps mention the contribution from Soline in the panel discussion, where she has undertaken unprecedented research, Soline Vinci, into with an approach that is at once sociological, historical, also involves linguistic anthropology and politics, by looking at various forms of sociability and collective engagement, which also runs counter to a vision of handicap as a personal tragedy. And I lastly remember something in the discussion was this notion of crip time, which we were reminded of, which can have alternative norms emerge, which may be judged impolite compared to traditionalist norms, which I also found quite a watershed moment in my thinking. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Marion. I will share a few of my own ideas before returning to Hannah and Marion on the question of day four. I will focus right now on our session with Marion Inc. and Soline Venetier. And I would say one of the things that excites me very much about not only the work today, but also I think Heidi Lorenz shared work in this direction yesterday, is, to be clear here, not the emergence of the disabled scholar as an identity, but the emergence of recognition, widespread recognition of the disabled scholar as an identity. And for someone who, if you do not know me, I work on the 19th century and British history, and I'm surrounded by blind tropes, the blind seer, the blind beggar, the blind poet. And I know, as many people here know, that there were many blind scholars of the 19th century, but to hear in conversation people reflecting on their lived experience of being academics and being people with disabilities, I find this very exciting, and I am glad for the self-reflective and auto-ethnographic work that is being done in this direction. I think it positions us to be activists in academia for better and different working conditions and for recognition of, as Marion has just mentioned, factors such as the different timelines of experience for people who are pursuing academic work alongside other forms of work such as care responsibilities as people with disabilities. The other thing that I would just draw out about today is, perhaps I have been thinking a lot about this as we managed some technical challenges and scheduling challenges today, is I have been thinking a lot about distance and proximity and intimacy. And I have been thinking about how both rich our digital engagement can be, this kind of virtual visiting that we have been doing. You know, I feel welcomed now, right now, into Marion and Hannah's homes. I hope you feel welcome into mine. But I think about what it means for us to do the work of disability studies scholarship, and specifically of blindness studies scholarship, internationally, with energy, with passion, but at a physical distance from one another. And I personally contrast that with the experience of being in the room, not the Zoom room, in the same room, in opportunities provided to us in the past by, for example, at Zina Vegan's conference in Paris in 2013. So I think I look to a new generation of scholars for whom this is the norm right now and the new normal. And I wonder what will happen in the future for our field and how our digitized engagement in this virtual forum will shape our work. and our sense of community. And then that brings me just to the pandemic. As perhaps people who were with us on the first day will recall, we dedicate this conference to our friend Brian Miller, who died in the early days of the COVID pandemic. And I am thinking a lot in light of, I should be clear, the work Marian Inc. and Soline Ndimpia shared today about how the pandemic has interrupted or disrupted, or perhaps, as Heidi Lorenz reminded us yesterday, facilitated in some ways our work as activists and scholars as we find new forms of connection. So while we may see things like the closing of a library or a museum or our inability to gather together in person, I was reminded by their work and by the presence of our interpreters and our translators and an audience that our work has continued. And I do not want to buy into narratives of overcoming, but I am deeply touched by the perseverance that scholars and activists are showing in the context of the pandemic and in these uncertain months of post-pandemic life. So those are things I have been thinking about as I have been listening and learning today. I would like to make sure that Hannah and Marian have a chance to say anything more that they would like to say in regards to day four before we move on to the broader conference. So Hannah, may I turn to you?
Yeah, I was going to mention autoethnography, and I was going to mention the new format of the conference. So Vanessa, so you stole my point about autoethnography, so I'm not going there anymore. For those who don't know us, Marian, Vanessa and I have been planning this conference for 4 years or something. We first had a proper conversation about it 3 years ago in Liverpool in the UK, and then in my house in Oxford. And then the pandemic hit and we had to rethink. And Marian and I we all wanted to meet in France, and we had all these plans to have like a sensory tour of the market in Lyon and have kind of French food. But Vanessa was very pragmatic, and she said, no, we're never going to be able to travel ever. We need to do it by distance. And so because of that, we came up with a new format. And we were very uncertain whether it would work or not. And that's why we kept sending people reminders about, you only have 5 minutes. And you know, we were, it's very difficult getting academics to change their habits. But actually I've been, all 4 days, I think, have been really engaging, much more interesting than hearing people reading long texts. So that's what I take from day four. Apart from the interest in the disabled scholar, and also the other thing that Vanessa said about the new generation, I'm very excited by the young youth, the next generation who are going to take what we've started and take it further. I want to share that I'm quite proud of our new format. I think it was Vanessa, I think, who came up with it in the first place, and I think it worked.
We have been very brave together, and so as a community. So Marion, can I turn to you for any thoughts about day four before we move on to some broader themes?
Oui, merci Vanessa. Tout d'abord, je me
yes, retrouve... thank you Vanessa. First of all, I identify completely with what you've just said, and now I'm going to move to the second roundtable of today, where I saw that Judas Breguin had done extremely thorough research into blind women in the first decades of the 20th century, showing how they suffered, and that's still the case today, unfortunately, and they suffered from sexist and oculocentrist prejudice, which are the source of the tragedy when it exists, and an ambivalent role of the larger associations of blind people in this respect, but he also underlined the importance and the diversity of movements fighting for the rights of blind women, showing a plurality of blind feminisms. With his work, he also joins into what Virginia and Raquel were saying and gives a major contribution to feminist studies on disability. And that's what they have done too, in a very determined way, following on from the feminist criticisms that were made of the social model of disability, and placing emphasis on embodied narratives. And that was said too in what Anaïs said, and I remember a passage, a moment in the discussion following that, where I found that she expressed things in an exemplary way, pointing out the possibility that we have to create a social model for blindness, a positive definition of blindness as empowering blind people, incorporating all the knowledge on their experience and all the knowledge that blind people have themselves, and also a negative definition of blindness, which has nothing to do with the tragedy or personal catastrophe that we heard of in other places, but which refers to the ableist experience suffered by blind people, where blind people have to fight against validism with their friends to bring about this empowerment talked about. And I could stop there for the time being.
Thank you very much, Marion, for that very thorough engagement, and for the excellent points that you raised regarding the work that was generously shared today. And speaking of generosity, we would like you all to begin to think of things that you would like to share and mark as things that you have learned or that you will take away from this conference as key points. Before I open up to the audience, which I will do in a few minutes, perhaps in about 5 or 6 minutes, I would like to spend some time in conversation with Hannah and Marion regarding our key points, what we are thinking of today. And I know from the many conversations we have had over these 4 days together, Hannah, Marion, and I, that we have many, many things on our minds, and it will take us many weeks to think through and process the insights you have generously shared. But I would like it if we could to, in this moment, quite spontaneously, think about some key ideas that are in our minds right now as the beneficiaries of so many meaningful conversations. So, Hannah, could I begin with you thinking about the 4 days as a whole? What is on your mind this evening regarding that?
So, it's actually something I just saw on Twitter. We haven't really been we haven't really mentioned Twitter, but we have, our technical support students have been tweeting, live tweeting the conference on Twitter, and I saw a response from an attendee who said that they're really, and it's something which I feel really deeply about, because it's related to my work as a, not my work as in my research, but my work as in my position in academia, which is that we have been talking about accessibility, but we've also been modelling accessibility. And we've really tried to make sure, put as much in place as we could think of to make this event accessible. And I feel quite strongly that I certainly feel like I have a responsibility to practice or try and practice what I ask for in terms of inclusion. And I was very interested, you know, when, for example, when we were talking about audio description, we were talking about audio description as a field of study, as an artistic genre, but we've also kind of included description in the conference as a as something we do. So I think I'm kind of interested in the way that we take, you know, the way that content and form might be kind of interrelated, and how we can take that forward.
Thank you, Hannah. That's a very interesting note for us to begin on. Marion, can I turn to you for one of the things on your mind this evening?
Oui, là encore, je rejoins.
Yes, here too, I agree with Anna completely, and we need to find public funding for research to enable us to set up events that are completely accessible, because unfortunately this wasn't the case this time. And in addition, what I would remember, if I just say one thing, it is the certainty from now on of the existence of the richness and legitimacy of our field of research, the research on blindness, because if, unlike deficit is, as Solita pointed out, there is no language that's specific to blind people, contrary to the different sign languages in the world. However, we do have languages in the literary sense of the word, and all the richness and creativity in terms of terminology and semantics were explored at the beginning of the conference. So we do have this language, and so we do have themes that are specific to us, such as country sensory experience, holy sensory experience. But we need to get beyond this with Marion's Inks approach. And we have experiences, phenomenology of blindness. What else? Everything that our teaching and touch methods that are very creative. Daniel Valente showed that. And as well, all the myths and stories about blindness that form a kind of oculocentric led ceiling. And a question that came to my mind was, shouldn't we speak about studies on blindness, as Anne-Marie-Jacques Sticker suggested, with respect to studies not on disability but about disability, to avoid adopting a position with respect to blindness which will weigh things down. And I also mentioned a position on Anaïs's talk and her theories of a standpoint, as Virginia talked about as well in her text. So studies about blindness, but it's not necessarily very attractive. Why not? Couldn't we say studies of blindness are based on the French translation of gender studies, where we say often say studies of gender. These are the questions that came to mind at the end of these 4 days.
Yes, Hannah.
Do you remember back on, I think it was Friday, when Devon Healy was talking, and she referred to blind studies rather than blindness studies. And I think David Anderson did too. So already we have a kind of, you know, we have different ways of talking about what we're doing. I don't know whether anyone's got any ideas about whether blind or blindness have different connotations or different. I can't really work out how they're different. I'm sure they are.
I think, Hannah, if I may jump in, so much of this is about our bilingualism, and as many people will have realized, I am a unilingual person, and so for you, Hannah, to be working often in both languages, I think that those kinds of nuances are important, and you provide us with a kind of a point of connection, as does this whole conference, as we come together as Anglophone and Francophone scholars. I think we should invite those ideas about terminology, and I appreciate, Marion, your very close reading, your close attention to language as we have been promoting those values. I will just share some of my kind of broad insights. I will go back to Hannah and Marion for one more turn each, for one more time each, and then I will call on the audience to kindly share insights they would like to. With brevity in mind, I think I would like to talk about care relationships. Those have been on my mind a lot throughout this conference about particularly experiences of blind people as givers of care, as providers of care, and how often that is ignored by the mainstream, by the non-blind majority. And I also think I want to highlight the importance of emotion. And many of our speakers have asked us to consider the value of emotion, its role, its inextricability from, for example, processes such as archival work, scholarly research. I think I want to center that to surface the importance of emotion, both how it is represented, how it is documented, and also how it is experienced by us as scholars and activists. And I had a very emotional day yesterday at the end of the day, and I felt very strong emotions. And I think they have to do with ideas about care. And in a conversation regarding the experiences of incarcerated blind people, I was deeply upset, I think, by the way in which the base assumption, the belief that shaped all of the work was that blind people are necessarily recipients of care. And it, to the extent where their removal from the home setting, from their so-called caregivers, was a threat to their existence. And I find this deeply problematic because while a prison space is a deeply problematic space, it is also a shared space. It is a space where community exists. It is a public space. And I kept feeling a fear, a concern that what was being communicated was that blind people belong at the home in a situation of domestic care. And I want to push back against that by echoing some of the great work that is being done by scholars in this community that value care, that treasure care, but that understand that care is bidirectional and is both provided and received by non-blind and by blind people. So that is very much on my mind. I will be quiet now. I will go to Hannah and then to Marion before opening up to the floor.
I did have something, and I've completely forgotten it. I know what it was. Because you took me back to yesterday, and then I was, yeah. I think something that came up much earlier is this idea, and it's kind of related to outdated models of understanding blindness. It's this idea about whether the role of audio description is to help blind people see So create images in the mind, or whether it's about exploring the non-visual elements of the art experience or the film experience. And I know that David has very strong views about visualization, and he knows that I also have different views. And I think, yeah, even something which we celebrate and which we talk about as a genre, like audio description, is sometimes still reminds us of the kind of charity model of disability.
Thank you, Hannah. And you remind us that audio description has been a very important vein or thread through this conference as well. Marion, to you now.
Non, mais en fait, tu peux passer la parole au public pour
Marion. No, I think, okay, you can open up the floor. I think I've said what I've got to say now.
Okay, so I will be monitoring the Google document. The link has been shared in the chat. I will be monitoring for people to raise the raise hand icon. And I will also be monitoring to see if anyone would like to choose to turn on their camera and wave the hand of their body, if that works for you, a hand of their own body. But I know that we have a question from Suzanne Germany. If I could call on Suzanne, if you would like to unmute Suzanne, or not a question, a comment. We are sharing in any format you prefer. So Suzanne, if you would like to go ahead, we are ready to hear from you.
I did write a comment, actually, and I just feel quite strongly that I liked Anissa's talk very much, because I felt that she was on a par with me in some way, because I haven't really looked at a lot of Francophone literature, because I'm a literary scholar. I liked the idea of a holistic approach to care, and being as I am a mother, a carer for a grown-up partially sighted son, I'm blind myself and also have a visually impaired and deaf husband, and also my son's partially sighted and deaf. I also enjoyed Marion and Celine's talk, and I just wondered whether we could use our interdisciplinary knowledge to emulate, well, not emulate, so I don't really know why I'm saying it, but to discern from some more blind people what they think, because I was very interested to look into what these people were saying, and I learned a lot today, I'm going to say, because I'm a literary scholar sort of dipping into disability studies too, because my research is kind of a bit of both, and I just really want to thank everyone for giving us insightful, I wish there was another word for insightful that I could think about, but it really helped me to continue to be an activist and to continue to swipe away all the oculocentrism that destroys blindness as being. I don't really regard my blindness as anything else but being. I can't comprehend what else there would be other than my blindness or being blind, to be honest with you. That was just all I wanted to say.
Suzanne, it's Vanessa here, and we thank you for sharing that very much. We appreciate you beginning this discussion with those wonderful comments. So thank you, Suzanne. And you remind us of the importance of lived experience in this conversation, and you also remind us of the importance of interdisciplinarity and how much we have to learn across disciplines. And the notion, we would say in English, the silo of either regional or disciplinary or perceptual silos of experience, and how limiting and dangerous those can be. So thank you very much, Suzanne. Kish, I see your hand up. If you would like to go ahead, Kish, we would be pleased to hear from you.
Hello. I wanted to first of all say Thank you so much to all of you and all the contributors. On the one hand, it has been amazing because it has generated so many new ideas, and also very concerning because it has doubled my workload. But one thing that I think I'm particularly proud of in terms of this conference is I've had many friends who are non-blind who have dipped in for particular sessions and listened, and they have been introduced to the work of David Johnson, who I have been following since 2015 when he came to Will Holloway and did a great exhibition there, and also just in general last year, I think, at the OXO Tower. What they've said is they've discovered his work and they've looked him up and they've asked me to find out where his next exhibition is going to be, which I think is incredible. But more to the point, they're impressed, and why wouldn't they, by the excellence of his work. Not, this is brilliant work from a blind artist. Just, this is brilliant work. And that's how I've always felt about my colleagues and the works that I have admired. I don't love Selina's libretto because Selina is blind, or Hannah's book because she's blind. The work stands alone for its excellence. And I hope that's the way that we're going forward. But anyway, enough of me kissing everybody's asses. I just wanted to say, David Johnson, you have many fans over London who are keen to find your work. So I will ask you where your next exhibitions are. Thank you very much.
Kish, thank you for that. We will turn to David momentarily. And I hope, Kish, that your social circle will be joining us in about an hour and 15 minutes at the workshop. If they're not, hop on social media. Anyone can register for the conference now. But Kish, thank you so much for what you shared as a participant and contributor to the conference and all of the energy and insight that you brought to the conference. But I will just say that you are reminding us of another theme from this conference, which is, I think importantly, Bruno Luzon raised this, if I remember correctly, but the notion of public-facing engagement and the importance of having these conversations, you know, beyond a circle of activists and academics and in community. And so it is wonderful to know that there has been that reach and it will continue. And of course, one of the most powerful ways we can communicate values and ideas about blindness and blindness studies is through creative works such as your own, Kish, and as those of David Johnson. David Johnson, I see your hand raised now. If you are finished with blushing from those kind words from Kish, can I ask you to unmute yourself and share whatever it is that you planned to share?
Hello, can you hear me?
We hear you well, David.
Great. Okay, yeah. Thank you, Kish. Thanks for those kind words. And yes, I was reminded of Georgina's remark about blushing, and I'm definitely doing that. And by the way, before I forget, my next exhibition is on the 22nd through to the 24th of July in Lewisham. As part of the Liberty Festival. I've got a large work going in there. But anyway, I wasn't coming on to self-advertise. I wanted actually to do two things. Respond to what Hannah said earlier about, and you, Vanessa, about care and the bi-directional directional flow of information, knowledge, and care. In audio description, in particular, I for many years I've been aware of that bi-directional flow and celebrated it and almost reveled in it. I love when I go to audio descriptions in galleries and museums how so often two things happen. Firstly, the audio describer says to me or others present, I'm seeing this work of art now differently or in an enriched way, or I've just noticed something in this painting or this sculpture that I hadn't noticed before until I was asked to do this audio description for you, ostensibly. But no, it's not just for me. It's not just for the blind visitors, visiting deaf visitors. It's for the audio describer as well. And the other thing that often happens is, as it were, uninvited, sighted visitors to the gallery or museum just sort of latch on to the group that we're in and start listening to the audio describer for the same reason that we're the visually impaired visitors are listening to the audio description, to get their minds directed and enriched by the words of someone else's view of the artwork. So those are the two ways in which I've noticed and enjoyed this sort of bi-directional nature of audio description, and it happens in so many other ways as well. But I was intrigued actually how the phrase disability or blindness gain hasn't been used very much at this conference. You know, I think it was mentioned just now, but I may have missed it when it happened before if it was mentioned. But the concept has been mentioned, I think, in other words. But that phrase, disability gain or blindness gain, which I use a lot in my own research, and which many of the people here at this conference invented or pointed out to me over the recent years, it wasn't actually mentioned. So maybe that phrase is going out of fashion a bit.
Well, let's bring it back, David, shall we? I think it hasn't been used very often because of the modesty of Hannah Thompson and also Georgina Klieg, both of whom we have to thank for that. So, David, I think you're not self-advertising here. You're advertising an important idea. And I thank you for that. And David, I was struck as you were speaking by the emphasis on blindness gain. I am one of those people who benefits immensely from blind culture. And I have snuck onto many a tour and benefited from audio description. And I've also benefited from my attempts at audio description and that learning. David, I thank you for bringing blindness gain back to our attention, but can I also thank you, David, for bringing material culture to our attention, not only through your own research, but you're recalling for me the importance of Georgina Klieg and Corinne Doria's contributions to this conference. Corinne, working with the history of the medical model and the eye chart, and as you would know, David, such interesting tactile work has been done in response to the eye chart. And I'm thinking, of course, of Georgina, as you are too, David, her extraordinary plenary and all she has shared throughout her career in terms of her engagement with art, including your works of art, David. I jumped in there to celebrate blindness gain, David. Yeah. Were there final words you wanted to add?
Just one other quick point. I just wanted to sort of amplify or repeat what was said earlier about, I think Hannah was, well, both of you, all three of you, were talking about the format of this conference. I can only just thank you so much for what must have been heaps of hard work to put this together. It's the most amazingly accessible thing I've ever experienced, and it must stand as a model for other institutions and other events like this going forward. I've never experienced anything quite so incredible.
You make me cry, David. Thank you. We have lost a lot of sleep hoping that this could work and would work. And so we appreciate that. We know Marion is thinking this right now. I know for sure. There is more for us to do and more to do in terms of creating safe spaces and more accessibility and more community. But thank you very much, David. And we look forward to joining you in about 1 hour and 10 minutes for your workshop. I will make a final call if there are people among us. This has been quite an Anglo-dominated conference, moment in the conference. So I welcome, of course, Francophone voices and perspectives. And I also welcome Marion and Hannah to rejoin the conversation with anything that they would like to add. In a few minutes, we will be hearing some thank yous from Marion. But I see that David R. Anderson, has raised a hand. So David R. Anderson, I will call on you now, please.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
We hear you well, David.
Okay, great. Thank you. Sorry, I had to take the moment when it stopped raining to go out with the dogs. I just wanted to echo the other people who have contributed to say thank you for putting the conference on. It's been a real delight. And especially also today, just the levels of interpretation. And I think someone even said, one of the speakers said about perception as interpretation. I really enjoyed that. I've been thinking a lot about translation. But I think maybe interpretation is much better. I just wanted to offer, I don't know if it's useful or not, but thinking about time, how crip time came up, incarceration and violence, different strands of feminism today. In my own work, I've thought a lot about Rob Nixon, N-I-X-O-N, he has a book on slow violence, sort of this idea that when we notice climate catastrophe, it's often the spectacular, the instantaneous, that which really grabs our attention. But in fact, as you know, we've talked about with COVID-19, it often is the slow, incremental moments that build up the worst kinds of violence. It's not that they're not to put them in comparison, but just that slowness that creeps up on us, and that the blind are good at being slow. We're good with taking our time. We notice things differently. And again, it's to get out of that the blind seer versus the burden. But we notice, we all with different disabilities, different sensoriums, notice differently. And so I just wanted to think about how I really been appreciating this idea of like pace of things. Doesn't mean it's bad, or you know, if judged by capitalist neoliberalism, maybe it is. But I thought I would contribute the idea of slow time and its benefits as a blindness gain, a huge blindness gain. I'm still struck by how the CNIB, the Canadian National Institute for the Blind here in Canada, has really stuck with this idea of vision loss. And that's all in their media and their outreach. It's all about vision loss. And it's part of why I just don't participate with them anymore in terms of my own personal activism. So I just, it was really exciting to hear different people's takes on time, on perception, the sensorium. I'm still thinking a lot about the polysensorial and Bertrand's idea of different kinds of blindnesses, almost like different kinds of biodiversity. So I just wanted to say thank you all for the conference. Thank you to all the speakers. It's been really, really fun to have this sort of ongoing radio show for the last 4 days. It's been a delight.
Thank you, David. Yeah, David, you. It has been a pleasure for us to get to know you, and we appreciate your company and also your very important contributions to the content of this conference. Fittingly, given your interesting kind of time and slow reading and the value, I will call on Bruno Lisson for our final comment from the audience. And of course, Marion, Hannah, and I invite you and encourage you to write us at your convenience in the days ahead. If you have comments to share. But Bruno, may I call on you now? Thank you.
Eh bien, je voulais dire au terme de cette 24 journées. D'abord, j'avais une certaine appréhension à l'idée de passer 4 jours.
So to wrap up after these 4 days, I was a bit worried about spending 4 days in front of my screen. I thought that might be rather a difficult sort of lockdown where we had to work from home. But at the end of the day, these 4 days have flown by, and in fact, I'm actually sad to be released from this lockdown. I've learned a lot in this symposium, in particular agency, ableism. These are concepts with which I was not fully familiar. So my thanks to all the participants and organizers. Today's contributions have been extremely full, rich. I cannot mention them all, but I do want to go back to Gildas's contribution. Of course, as a historian, that resonated with my own experience, and he probably did a better job than I could have done in terms of expressing my ideal of what blindness historians should be doing, and thanks to him for that. I'm also keen to draw up the proceedings of this symposium, which I promised. Circulation of a Belgian periodical of on blindness studies for those who are visually handicapped, but also and many other audiences. And lastly, I would like to respond to Marion Chotin's suggestion to not talk about in French studies on disability or blindness, but studies about, and I would definitely sign up to that tweak in terminology, and I thank her for that, and I hope that that will have broad support. Thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of our conference.
Thank you all. I will just do a quick reminder. We gather again in 1 hour for David Johnson's workshop. We will have translation available. But now I want to thank Hannah and Marion for our conversation and all the people who joined. But I turn things over to Marion Chotin.
Merci, Vanessa.
Thank you, Vanessa. So, to wrap up, and on behalf of Hannah and Vanessa and myself, I would like to thank the many people who have helped contribute to the success of this event. We were inspired in our organization by the success of the Parisian conference in 2013 with Zina Vegan, who explored the narratives of blindness, and more recently by discussions that some of us have been able to began in 2015 at the Blind Creations Symposium organized by Vanessa and Hannah. And we were also inspired by the work that many of you have done over the subsequent years. So thank you very much for having agreed to join us in this unconventional symposium format. We've tried to make as much space as possible for informal discussion, and thank you for having supported us throughout that. We are very grateful to you for your commitment in this manner. We would also like to thank a few other people just briefly. Thank you to our interpreters, Jonathan Hanley, Emmanuel Somstay, and Naomi and David Buick, and Marie Pissarro. Apologies for the speed typing. I should have copy-pasted this. Too late now. Sorry. Armel, Gretchen, Sophie, Shait, and Vivian Enfourvier. We also like to thank our technical assistant students who have done a huge job, Mia Levin, Marion Cordepart, and Elizabeth Eschel, and Annabelle Newag. Thank you also to our transcribers, Mia Levin, Clémence Lavial, Marion Cordepart, Guylaine Roussis, Lilian Roussel, Sébastien Durand, Gilles Préquin, and Thibault Chambriard, and I hope I have not forgotten anybody in that list. Also, our thanks go to the many people who have agreed to chair or moderate sessions, and all of whom have done a great job. We'd also like to thank those who supported the conference by being members of the Scientific Committee and the Organisational Committee, and Catherine Gudik and Zina Vegan have agreed to take on the role of co-chair of the conference, and our thanks also go to Georgina Glick and Corina Doria, our keynote speakers. We also would like to thank our partners, whose contributions have also enabled us to pay for the interpreting and the cost of the websites without there being any fee for registration. And last, but by no means least, my thanks to Hannah and Vanessa. Sorry for the tremble in my voice. Thanks to this great trio that we've formed for many months to prepare this event. And I'm really blown away by the people that you are in every way. Your generous spirit, your human touch, your professionalism, your sensitivity, and your sense of humour, and your supportiveness. So thank you. And it's great to have colleagues such as yourselves. And before welcoming David Johnson for the last event, we just would like to thank you again for everything we've learned in your company over the course of these 4 days and the weeks during which we have pored over your research. Welcoming a symposium like this may appear to be an act of generosity, but in fact we feel like it's a present that you've given us all. So the gift or the gain of learning from you and doing so remotely. So thank you again wholeheartedly for what you have enabled us to gain.
Thank you, Marion. It is Vanessa here, and I am very touched by your kindness. And Hannah is too. We will welcome you all back in just less than 1 hour for David Johnson's workshop. We hope that you will have a meal or a walk or a glass of wine and join us at the top of the hour again. And thank you for our interpreters who we have taken over time by several minutes again. Thank you all. We will leave the room open. We will be together again in about 55 minutes. Thank you.